Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again on the quest for 10,000. I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And Brian continues his journey to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Thanks for joining us once again for this conversation about movies and why we love them. And we invite you to participate in the quest by following 10K Movies on Twitter or going to Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. And chiming in on what you think about the reviews that Brian does, the list that he has created of his ranking of the movies he's seen thus far, and maybe even to make suggestions of movies that Brian should see next. So, on this episode, what we're going to talk about are the twists and turns so far that have been on Brian's journey. In our experience anyways, no path is quite linear, quite so straightforward into the horizon, and this journey of Brian to watch 10,000 movies has had a number, probably, of twists and turns, a number of unexpected occurrences, pleasant surprises, regrettable detours, no doubt. So, Brian, let's start there. What have been the pleasant surprises along the way as you've watched all these different movies? Maybe what are some of the things you've seen, you've learned, that you wouldn't have had you not undertaken this goal?
Well, a couple of things. One thing, when I was in college, one of the first times, one of my professors said something to me that I had heard after that repeatedly in various classes and in various forums, that every book and to a lesser extent or a greater extent, every movie is part of a conversation, part of a larger conversation. And watching a ton of different movies from various years and genres and parts of the world, you can see that conversation taking place in a way that maybe you wouldn't if all you saw was whatever came out at the cinemas, in your lifetime, and that was all you had seen. You might not, and it gives you a kind of an appreciation for sometimes when a movie that is a current hit, when it's calling back to movies that maybe you wouldn't have known that, hey, they obviously watched and respected this film, and they have seen this film, and they have seen that film. And it just lets you understand that no one creative person is an island forcing their way on and blazing a new trail, but that they're building on something that has gone before.
Well, and at the risk of using a horrible pun, it's giving you a sense of the big picture
of
movies.
Certainly.
And also expanded your genres that you see. I mean,
sure.
If you're going to watch 10,000 movies, they can't all be of one person or one director or one actor.
Certainly not, but it lets you see, you have a better idea for when you really like something, you know what it is maybe that you like about it that maybe you wouldn't have known before. Maybe you have a better idea of when you do really like them. I have several friends, but particularly younger friends, that they go see a movie, and every movie they say, this was the best movie ever.
Yeah, that's part of being a kid. I mean, everything was the best
when
you were a kid.
Sure, but you sort of learn to be real. The more movies you watch, the less likely it is you're going to use the word best. Because you can think.
Right, you become more discerning.
Especially when you are particularly trying to put them in. You know that word, it means something a little bit more to you. But to give you an example of some of the, before I started this process, I knew who Buster Keaton was, but now I have a deep and abiding love for Buster. Ingmar Bergman is somebody that I go to that really has helped shape, in a lot of ways, my current thinking on spiritual issues, because his films are really asking a lot of questions in a way that maybe I hadn't heard or hadn't seen or hadn't thought before. Going old school, because I know you mentioned you'd just seen Hugo earlier, recently I've been on a Georges Méliès kick, and it really is striking to see movies that are over 110 years old, and sometimes they're funnier than movies that you watched at the theater last week. And it's just there's something about there's something comforting in knowing that a lot of times you can see issues that maybe we're dealing with now. You can see those and you can see how they're working through them 110 years ago. You know, and you think there's literally probably no one alive on this planet who saw this in the theater when it came out. And yet, here it is, still, you know, out there somewhere where you can access it and you can see it. And
well, that's real interesting to me. That one of the things you learn in this, too, is that the amount of stuff that's maybe 100% new, very small amount, that a lot of it is maybe riff on themes and motifs and beats that have come before, and some done very creatively. And that's not to say that there aren't movies that you've seen that do something completely different than what's come before. But it's interesting to see that again, when you get that big picture, one of the unexpected things is, it's sort of a sense where, from what I'm hearing you say, is you're saying you get a sense that, hey, not all movies are the same, but then you get a deeper sense of a connectivity and a similarity amongst all films.
Well, and I would say that the films that work for me are the films that intentionally try to connect themselves to something that's gone before. Now, and I don't have to be overt about it. I don't mean they have to be like, you know, obvious references, but the films that feel connected are the films that seem to resonate more. And a lot of times I think that's because we even without knowing it, we feel that sense of the familiar, and that is somewhat comforting, but it also can lead us on to trust this filmmaker in a way maybe we wouldn't have otherwise.
Right. So here's another question going in a little bit of a different direction. Give me some examples, maybe, of two things. First, what's a movie that you went in, maybe not expecting much, and just ended up being blown away? One of our previous recordings, you mentioned the movie Paddington is one like that. So maybe some others like that. But then also maybe give us some of the regrettable choices.
Well, there are a lot of regrettable choices. A lot of times,
maybe we start with those.
I'm suffering through movies. A recent movie that I watched that I knew the movie and I knew I'd watch it at some point. I knew it was not something that was high on my list, and it's going to be weird to talk about it in this way. But the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was actually really. Had an energy to it.
This is an example of a movie that you were not expecting.
I didn't love it. I'm not a huge fan of slasher films in general, but this movie had an energy to it and a raw. I think because it was made on like a shoestring budget, and they were just in a rush to get it done and all this sort of stuff. But it had an energy to it that I think a lot of even more slicker, more well produced, more, you know, less obvious horror films don't. And it had some crazy twists and turns. It wasn't really all that gory, because again, they were on a limited budget, didn't have a lot of money for all that kind of stuff. It was very effective in a way I didn't think it would be. Another horror movie that was very similar, it's a recent movie, and I didn't have a lot of expectation for it because it was relatively new. But The Babadook, it's on Netflix now. Great movie. It reminds me of like an old like German expressionism movie. It's got some weird angles, and it looks like the rooms are sort of like not perfectly square, and it's a really fun movie.
Can you think of any movies you've seen that you thought at the time, these have all the elements of just, I'm going to love this film,
yeah,
and then you're like, this was, and not just that it was mediocre, but maybe like it was really like, it became painful at some point to watch.
Well, that happens a lot of times when there's a particular actor or there's a particular director that I'm a huge fan of, and I think, oh, well, this is a film of theirs that I haven't seen, I need to see, and then suddenly I realize this is why I haven't seen this film, because this is just not good. You know, that happened with Jack Lemmon. I love Jack Lemmon. I think Jack Lemmon is fantastic. But him and Billy Wilder, they did The Apartment, they did Some Like It Hot. So, you know, the guys have a history.
Chemistry.
There's a movie called Avanti. I don't know that I'm saying it right, I'm probably not. But it's about a guy who, his dad dies in Italy, so he goes to, you know, get his body back. He finds out his dad was having an affair every summer in Italy, and that's why he went away every summer. Well, then he finds out that he finds the daughter of the man that his dad was having an affair with. He starts having an affair with her. It's not a very good movie. And I love both of those guys, so I was very disappointed.
So, unexpected things you like, things... Okay, before we finish the conversation, two other things I wanted to ask you to comment on briefly. What is maybe a genre of film that you've had to delve into just to kind of get your count of movies up? You mentioned horror movies. You had to watch horror movies that.
Yeah,
and that's one of those things that...
I don't love.
But what else have you kind of gotten into that maybe you wouldn't have had otherwise and that you've liked?
I probably wouldn't have watched many samurai films. not that I've watched a plethora of samurai films, but that's what
you're way more into Asian cinema.
I am way more into Asian cinema. That sounds like it belongs in a chat room somewhere or something, but it doesn't sound like a legitimate conversation. I'm way into Asian cinema now. I'm open for anything. I'm watching a lot of films about subjects and stuff that I wouldn't watch. I watch a lot more documentaries than I maybe would have otherwise, which sometimes, you know, they're not all that enlightening. I watched something the other night. I just saw the documentary about Glenn Campbell and his struggle with Alzheimer's. Very, very powerful, touching stuff. A little bit exploitive, I'll be honest with you. It felt you a little cringe, like, who's doing this and why are you doing this again? But still very powerful.
Still very powerful. So, and that's my second question. I sense with this, part of what's been going on is it's not just a mass consumption of media, right?
It is.
Well, it is, but it's not just that.
Okay.
It feels like that as you've watched these movies, that you've tried to kind of, I don't know, apply in some way to other relationships, other things. So maybe that's it. What's the most unexpected lesson? And you mentioned that in the beginning, the movie's part of a larger conversation. But what's what's maybe another unexpected lesson that you've taken so far from this quest to watch so many movies?
Well, you can see a lot of recurring themes in you know, people as diverse as Quentin Tarantino and maybe a Swedish filmmaker from the 50s or maybe a Douglas Sirk. I mean, you know, you can see things that all these people are touching on, because you can see there are some things and some ideas and some stories that are universal and that can bind us together regardless of all our other differences, that we all have, at the core, we all have several basic concerns and wants and needs, and you can to see those expressed over and over and over again from various people and at time and various cultures and various ways only drives home how similar and how much we all have, you know, the same desires and wants for our lives.
All right. Well, we got a little bit deep on you there, listeners, with those sorts of things. But that's partly why we want to do this, too, is that remembering that movies, yes, they're fun, they are imaginative, they're creative, but they're also not just to be consumed. They're to help us reflect and interpret and hopefully view the world in new and helpful and insightful ways. So the unexpected things, whether good or bad, often do that for us. So as we conclude this part, we move on now to what latest things Brian has learned from the latest movies he has watched. So, Brian, give us one review.
Okay, good or bad, does it matter?
Doesn't matter, you pick.
Okay, we've been talking a lot about good stuff, so let's talk about something bad. I did have the misfortune of seeing the sequel to Baby Geniuses. This movie currently... if I'm correct, I think I am, it currently has a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. That is based on probably the five people that saw it. It's Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2. Now, I'm wondering who saw Baby Geniuses and said, you know what, I'd like to spend some money to see how the story's going to go, what the next level's going to be. John Voight signed on for this movie, which only makes you realize that maybe Angelina Jolie was right to distance herself from him. Because you think about it, after his Oscar in 78, what? I mean, John Voight's career has not, other than being the butt of a joke on Seinfeld, what has his career been known for? The actor?
Varsity Blues.
I mean, there's not a lot. He was in 24. I give you that. But
Varsity Blues. He was the coach.
Sure. That's just not a lot of highlights.
It's like the evil Friday There's Night
Lights.
There's
a lot of low
coach.
Lights. There's a lot of low lights for
Mission
for
Impossible movies. 1.
Yeah, he was the horrible bad guy who tried to screw all of IMF or whatever. Spoiler alert for a 20-year-old movie. But you didn't know by now.
Throwback to another podcast we saw several times in the theater.
Yeah, we did. That was a heyday. That was 96, late 90s. Clinton was in office.
Gross. Red light, green light. Yeah, you know, that's everything that was going on. Yeah.
Another horrible movie I would not recommend on somebody. Guy Ritchie, great director, directed Snatch, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, Sherlock Holmes 2. But somewhere along the way, you know, he was married to Madonna. And at some point, they decided to make a movie together. Now you know why they're divorced. Because it was a horrible turd of a movie. Swept Away. It was not good. It was a remake of an Italian film. But apparently, what happened, Madonna plays this spoiled American who is married to Bruce Greenwood, who I like, but not when he's married to Madonna. But they have all sorts of money and you know, they just think they deserve everything and very hoity-toity. And they go to Italy on a vacation. She's very rude to the servants on their little yacht and their little ship. She gets stranded on a desert island with one of the waiters, and they fall in love in a very sadomasochistic relationship that defies all expectations. Within hours of them being on the boat.
So, unexpected theme here.
Yeah. Within hours of them being on the island alone, he's like, "You may call me master." And she says, "Okay, master." And then, so, "I love you." But then she leaves with her. It's just horrible. It's horrendous.
That's just horrible. What I like most about this segment, Brian, is that, you know, earlier we kind of ended with a very deep philosophical.
Yeah, now we're talking about turd.
And in this one, you've used the word turd twice now. And also, you're psychoanalyzing people's failed marriages based on and failed relationships
and,
with their
end
daughter.
Of the day, end of the day, they got divorced. Okay, so I'm not psychoanalyzing, I'm quoting facts.
Just
another
saying.
Horrible movie I saw recently, Frank Miller's The Spirit.
Okay.
It was not as bad as the two previous entries, but it was just, it felt like what it is, which was a poor attempt to recapture the quote-unquote magic of Sin City.
So, there you have it. Three really bad movies. None of them necessarily, I think, you went into expecting them to be good.
No, perhaps
they still defy those expectations.
No. They met and exceeded. They exceeded.
How low they may have been.
If you want to know what's good, you got to know what's bad.
Well, that's true. That's true. I think John Keats sort of said that, too. So, listeners, you can find reviews for other movies that Brian has seen at 10kmovies.com. You can also find on that blog a link to the rankings of Brian's movies. You see his overall rankings there. And those rankings come into play often as we talk about different top fives in certain categories in each podcast that we do. Today, in keeping with the theme of the unexpected, top five movies that have some sort of twist ending, surprise ending. That's kind of, again, up to your interpretation of what that means, Brian. So, what do you
and
have?
I struggle with what twist ending meant, you know, because there was a little bit of discussion in my own head about this question.
Now, before we get into this list, again, spoiler alert. if you have not seen certain movies, we'll name the movie. And then you might want to fast forward a little bit if you haven't seen it. So
I'm going to go ahead and throw out a few that I struggle with. Not really going to go into, but these are honorable mentions that I like and would almost make the list, except I chose to exclude them for a variety of reasons, which will remain to me. Signs, in Night Shyamalan.
Okay.
Good. I like that movie quite a bit. The Sixth Sense, too. I'm going to lump those in together. Good, twisty movies. Okay.
I will say real quick about The Sixth Sense. I went into that movie knowing there was a twist. Didn't know what the twist ending was. Knew that there's a twist ending, right?
Uh-huh.
About halfway through the movie, I turned to my girlfriend, now wife, and said, "He's really dead." And she looked at me, and she was very mad because she then was like, How did you guess that? And you're right.
Apparently you're right. How did you guess
that? And it's just because I knew there was a twist. I was like, that's the only twist that makes sense. He's, you know, the I see dead people. He's got to be dead. They don't know they're dead. He's got to be it. So, okay.
Hey, Gosford Park, which is like a murder mystery. So I didn't really know if it counted as a twist ending because it's a murder mystery. So I don't really know if that counts as a twist ending. Like, surprise, there was a mystery to this murder. Like, you don't really count Scooby-Doo's as having twist endings.
Right.
Like,
it's,
you know, the other one, Vertigo, I didn't really know if that was that's really not about the twist, although there is sort of, but it's like 30 minutes into the movie. How much of a twist is that? So that's, you know, just throwing those out there, say I am aware of those, love those movies, but they just didn't make the list. Number five, Gone Baby Gone. Not Gone Girl, Gone Baby. You may get them confused because Ben Affleck directed this one. He starred in the other one, which I did not like. But Gone Baby Gone, directed by Ben Affleck, based on a book by, I think, Dennis Lehane, starring Casey Affleck in probably the best thing he's done in his career. Really good movie. The twist involves who actually was responsible for kidnapping this girl, but it's a real stylish, well done movie.
And any movie that makes Morgan Freeman the quote unquote antagonist,
I like the fact that except for Wanted, he's the antagonist.
And Chain Reaction, although he's sort of a neutral figure in that.
There's a lot of corollaries to this any movie, but it's already above points, what it would have been.
Point taken.
Yeah.
Previous statement withdrawn.
Yeah.
Continue on, number four.
Okay, number four, Chinatown. Roman Polanski.
Chinatown, Jake. It's Chinatown.
A lot of people don't like Roman Polanski, Chinatown. With good reason. I'm not here to defend a sexual predator. But, but his movie, which exists outside of his sexual predator habits, I will say it's a very good movie.
Best joke in Inside Out. Forget it.
It's Dreamtown.
It's Dreamtown. Love that.
Yeah. But it's a great movie, and the twist is very uncomfortable and very like shocking. But it's a really good movie.
Well, and you can even say that the twist is not only the big reveal
about their relationship,
about that, but also just in the way that. The movie ends on that. There's no
resolution.
No one. You know, it just kind of ends on. Hey, Jake, it's Chinatown. You know, that's what happens. So I think that's in some senses, even in a noir film, you know, to me, in some senses, that's a little bit of a twist and subversion of your expectations of.
It's absolute refusal.
Anyone being brought to justice.
It's refusal to give you any sort of like ending or resolution is very stark and very like abrupt. And you're like, well, how does this end? Of course, they tried to end it in the sequel to Two Jakes, and that didn't work. The next one is a movie that not a lot of people have seen. It's called The Man in the Glass Booth.
Not a lot of people have seen.
It's a mid-70s film. Maximilian Schell, who... If you don't remember, which you may not, he won an Oscar for Judgment at Nuremberg and then acted in a lot of things, but just nobody remembers him. But he plays a Jewish Nazi death camp survivor who is this multimillionaire, rich, whatever. Then it's revealed that he is actually a former officer in a Jewish death camp, in a Nazi death camp, who has been masquerading as a Jew in New York City for 20, 30 years, and they arrest him. He's like, no, I'm not it. But then he goes on trial, and then there's lots of twists about, is he real? You wind up questioning yourself, is he really Jewish? Is he really in the Nazi death? I mean, which side is he on? But it really does question you why you have visceral feelings about certain people and why you don't about certain other people. Very powerful movie. And mostly, when he goes on trial, he is like kind of like Saddam Hussein, kind of in a little glass area. That's where the title comes from. But very good movie. Very unexpected and dark and twisted and darkly funny. Really good movie.
Number two,
a little more conventional, straight up heist. Well, not heist, but kind of a con movie. Matchstick Men. So much fun.
Underrated.
Very underrated. I mean,
Who was the director of that?
Ridley Scott.
Okay. Ridley Scott should direct Nicolas Cage a lot.
He should. He got one of the best performances. I mean, Nicolas Cage, there's been... you don't have to have me tell you that there's... Nicolas Cage is a polarizing figure. But, you know, I like him.
He's a very unexpected actor.
He's a very unexpected actor. And usually, whatever choice you would think a normal person would make, he's going to make the opposite choice. But this is one of his better movies, and it's just a... You know, it's just, and I know that on the second, third viewing, I think maybe it wouldn't hold up as well because all of a sudden all the things that they built on were like, that's a big, huge, gaping plot hole. You couldn't possibly have done that. You know, I feel like the same thing may have been true about Now You See Me, which I liked, but I feel like the second, third time through, it's going to weaken the. But you know, one time if you want to watch it, this is a lot of fun.
Right, and it's one of those films that highlights very much something you and I share. Which is, we are drawn to con artist movies. Just so much, fun.
Even if they're schlocky, horrible, whatever. You
still want to watch them.
Yeah,
still want to watch them.
Well, and so, I love movies that, like, the resolution of the movie is cutting back to show you like these little elements that happened while you weren't quote unquote paying attention. I love that.
Yeah.
I know it's crazy.
Yeah.
The last one, number one, clear number one, is The Sting. Probably the quintessential con movie, pairing Robert Redford and Paul Newman, two of the greats. And it's just so much fun. And when he comes in and the character, Paul Newman's character, you know, they like fake their death, and then they get Brian. Isn't it Brian Dennehy? Yeah, Brian Dennehy. And then it's just a perfect movie.
Yeah. That to me also the best con artist movie there is, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So many great actors in that.
So many great
actors.
So much. It's just so much fun. And it's one of those movies. Now, yeah, unlike a lot of con movies, you can rewatch The Sting.
Oh yeah.
Multiple times,
just,
and
I mean,
not
just
feel
Paul
cheated
Newman.
Or
just Paul Newman and Robert Redford on screen, and that one too. Again, lots of different twists
and
in
I,
that film.
I
lots
like
of
Paul Newman a lot
things.
As a young, but as Paul Newman aged, he got better.
Yeah,
and I think older middle aged Paul Newman, about the time that the mid-70s to mid-80s, that was his peak.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Movies with twist ending. Top five. Number one, The Sting. So tell us what you think are the best movies, the top 5, top 10, top 15, 20, that have twist endings in them by going to 10K Movies on Twitter or following Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Thank you again so much for spending time with us on this conversation about unexpected things that we may learn as we join Brian on this quest to watch all these movies in the next several years. Until next time, hope your week is a 10.
10 plus. Borderline 11.
Have a good one, everyone.